Thanks, Carla. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. What a day for the Irish, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is an historic day. You might remember about 2 months ago, there was a map in the Irish Times. And I remember sharing with you that we have 0.06% of the world's population. Now, that is minuscule. That is minute. And yet, rock on to today and the announcements of the nominations for this year's Oscars, and we are punching above our weight and some. It's just like this is winning the World Cup in the cinema. It's winning the Rugby World Cup, winning all the big sprints in the Olympics, the 100 metres, the 200 metres, the 400 metres, the marathon, all of that, all rolled into one. It's that big, lads. It's that big. Do you want to be reminded? You probably were off doing something else, so you didn't hear them. So we'll go through them here. Let's have a bit of Irish music in the background. Thank you very much. There you go. Thank you. Yes, yes. So here we go. We start with the Banshees. The Banshees of Inisherin.
The nominees for achievement in film editing are The Banshees of Inisherin.
Yay!
Here are the nominees for achievement in music, original score. The Banshees of Inisherin.
Yay!
And here are the nominees for original screenplay. The Banshees of Inisherin.
That's going well so far, isn't it? Yes. Yeah, Martin McDonagh. Well done, Martin.
Here are the nominees for performance by an actor in a supporting role. Brendan Gleeson in
and
Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And.
Barry Keoghan.
Yay!
In the Banshees of Inisherin.
You've got his name sort of right.
Here are the nominees for performance by an actress in a supporting role. Kerry Condon in
Yay!
The Banshees of Inisherin.
Achievement in directing, and the nominees are Martin McDonagh, The Banshees of Inisherin. Here are the nominees for performance by an actor in a leading role. Colin Farrell in The Banshees of Inisherin.
And
Paul Mescal.
Yeah, come on, Kildare, yes.
Here are the 10 nominees for Best Motion Picture of the Year.
The Banshees of Inisherin, Graham Broadbent, Pete Charmaine, and Martin McDonagh.
We're not finished yet.
Now, it's with great pleasure that I get to announce this year's nominees for Best Live Action Short Film. An Irish Goodbye.
Yo, that's amazing. I just watched it today. And probably the most special announcement of the day.
Here are the nominees for Best International Feature Film. The Quiet Girl.
Yeah! Back in the net! Now, we were speaking to the director of On Colin Kuhn, The Quiet Girl, Colin Barade, last week, and he told us that the cast and crew of the movie were gathering in the Cella Cinema in Rathmines to watch the nominations today. High risk, we thought at the time, but it's paid off. And we've sent Sinead Niulacon down there, and Sinead's on the line now. Good afternoon, Sinead!
Good afternoon, Ray. Well, Lord Orsale, history was made today when An Colin Kuhn became the first movie to be nominated for an Oscar. I think it was the icing on the cake, many will agree, after so many wonderful nominations and awards that were given to the movie over the past few months. And I'm here in the Stella Cinema at the moment, and it is quiet. We're talking about An Colin Kuhn on Pigdurlan Kuhn and so, because it is quite quiet, but it wasn't at about 1:45 Irish time, I reckon. I think you might have a clip of the crowd cheering.
All quiet on Western Front, Germany. Argentina, 1985, Argentina. Close, Belgium. Io, Poland. And the quiet girl.
And it went on.
And on.
And on.
And on. And why not? I tell you, well deserved.
So what was the story with the press and you and everybody else down there today?
Well, ní raibh cad ag an breis. Media were not allowed in for the screening of the nominations earlier today. So everyone was outside the door, and I'm sure that we could all hear those cheers and that we knew that the Colleen Kuhn had been nominated. But they strung it out. It was the fifth film to be listed when the nominations were being given from the theatre in Beverly Hills. So they did make us wait for it. But I think the second that it was named as the fifth film, everyone was so happy.
Yeah.
And the press were allowed in, and it was just so nice to see the cast and crew and their families all gather around. Everyone was so happy, so joyful. Colm Bóréad an Stiúrthóir gave a little speech, and he's by my side here. You'll hear from him in a few minutes' time. But I was talking to some of the cast and crew, and they were telling me that this was pretty much the wrap party that they had, because when An Cailín Chún was filmed, it was, of course, during the you-know-what, we won't mention it, and not everyone was allowed to party. So this was the party, and it is quite quiet here in the Stella at the moment, and I think that's because everyone is probably upstairs having a drink or two celebrating, and that they richly deserve that as well.
Yeah.
Ach, how could this not hash story as an crew, some of the crew, some of the actors, and Colm, of course, have decided to come back in to have a little chat to you. And Colm is by my side here, so I might pass you over to the man of the moment, Colm Bóréad.
Thank you very much, Sinead and Eulachon there down the Stella in Rathmines. Colm Bóréad, Cohorticus.
Kermin Mogget, right? Dukretje, unbelievable, incredible stuff. I mean, you mentioned like all the big sporting occasions. Like, this is, I lived through Italia 90. I remember I was like 8 at the time, and this was the closest experience to like that David O'Leary final penalty kick, you know, waiting to see. Because they really, we were the last one. They were called out alphabetically. So we kind of had a feeling if we were going to be called out, we'd probably be last. So it was really tense, like coming towards the end there. It was crazy.
You needed George Hamilton saying, "A nation holds its breath." Because it's funny, because after nomination number 4, I heard somebody in the audience down the Stella go, "Oh no." So
yeah,
that cheer was relief and celebratory.
Yeah, I think it's because the fourth one was EO, which was the Polish film, and you know, people weren't sure whether that was going to make it or not. So, you know, we're obviously experts now on all these different films, yeah, and where what was expected to happen with them, but yeah, so I think people thought when that one was in, it was like, oh no, is that after bumping us out or what's happening? But yeah, it's obviously went our way at the end, so things went a bit crazy in here.
I know from talking to you, you're a calm enough individual, but can you give us an idea of what was going through your head, you know, from the time you got up this morning till the announcement just after 1:30 today?
I mean, it's more what was going on in my heart. I think it was like my heart rate has just been definitely a bit higher all day long. I mean, we kind of, you know, we were sort of like, you know, it's obviously incredibly difficult to be nominated. So you have that. But we were also kind of hopeful. Like, we kind of felt like all the screenings that we had in LA and the feedback we'd gotten from Academy members, it felt like there was just a kind of momentum behind the film. And then, you know, when we saw like An Irish Goodbye, the short film got nominated, and we were seeing all these wonderful nominations for Banshees, we kind of felt like, okay, maybe this is like a thing. Maybe this is just like an Irish wave that's going to happen here.
Yeah.
And yeah, it happened. And then obviously After Us, then Paul Mescal as well for After Sun, which I was like so happy about. I think he's incredible in that film. So yeah, what a day for the Irish. This is like the Italia 90 for Irish film, definitely.
And we forget how small we are, because sometimes we have notions about how big we are, but we're tiny really on the international stage, aren't we? So to have 14 nominations, it's out of this world.
Yeah, and then consider then that one of those nominations is an Irish language film, you know, and that's a minority language, like that's the minority of the minority, you know. It's like, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like 2% of people on the island, I think, speak Irish on a daily basis or whatever. But obviously a lot more people have a kind of a grasp for it, and hopefully this film will help people to sort of maybe rediscover it or to re-engage with it in a different way. But yeah, we're just very proud that we're there, that we've got an Irish language film onto the Oscars. Yeah, it's crazy.
Were there tears of joy, yourself and Cleona, your wife?
I was kind of in shock. I'm still in shock.
Oh,
I don't know.
Right.
I think maybe I'll be like a blubbering mess later on tonight after a few pints. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, there were definitely people were crying and just a lot of hugging going on. I haven't hugged that many people in quite a while.
Hugs are good.
Yeah, it was just, oh, what a day. Like, and it was just, everyone was here. You know, Screen Ireland were here and TG Carr and all the cast and crew and just amazing, you know. And even if we hadn't won, we were thinking, you know, this is going to be a celebration of everything that the film has achieved. And, you know, it would have been a wonderful day anyway. But like this now is just like next level. It's incredible.
Yeah, well listen, congratulations. And we're going to be speaking to other people from on Colleen Kuhn, The Quiet Girl. But for the moment, Colin Bareid, Cohardigas Arish, Gurmagat.
Gurmil Magad, right?
Yes, Lon. Now, Paul Mescal, nominated for Aftersun, and we go live to County Kildare to Paul's mother, Dervla. Good afternoon, Dervla.
Hi, Ray. How are you? In my kitchen.
Yes. Great to talk to you, Dervla.
Wow. Oh, so you too.
Wow,
what a magical intro, like for all of those people.
Yes.
Like, it was just so fantastic. It just was real magic and joy.
Yeah.
Lovely.
What a joyous day. And there was a lot of joy in the Mescal household, I would imagine.
Yes.
So who was there and how were you watching it and what happened?
I don't watch them because I find it way too stressful. So I was folding washing, literally. And Paul was obviously at work. And obviously Nell is in London and Dunica's in New York. So he's only just up. So, yeah, he was in work in New York, I think, isn't it? I don't know what time it is
it's
in
five,
New York.
They're 5 hours. Yeah, they're 5 hours.
Yeah, so
us,
he was. So it's I just wait for the WhatsApp.
Right.
And that's what we did. We had this magic WhatsApp and shocked faces and crying eyes and
wow, it's
ridiculous, but that is how it felt.
And here's the thing, because you know the people who know, the pundits who follow these things, were saying, and we'll never know, of course, but that it was between your son and Tom Cruise for an Oscar nomination.
I know. Yeah, that's bizarre. That's totally bizarre and totally. But you know, for me, it was a case of, you know, you're watching it and you're listening and you know, not the fact that I didn't know this. I probably always presumed that people knew before it got announced. Nobody knows.
No.
So it is just this nerve-wracking 5 hours of once you wake up of waiting. It's crazy. Sick emojis going through the family WhatsApp.
Yeah.
My tummy, everything. Yeah. Walking the canal this morning, trying to magic just, I'm here. This is fine. This is normal. This is a normal day. This is what we do. Yeah.
Because now it'll always be Oscar nominated Paul Mescal. That's, you know, that's it for life.
It is. I mean, he's 26.
Yeah.
You know, and when you look at the people he's with and, you know, people, we kind of jokingly say we're a country of storytellers and things like that. And we actually, when you see what we've produced, it is quite amazing. And, you know, the films that are there are just incredible. And Paul is just one of those very lucky boys to be in that mix.
Like, you're going to be emotionally wrecked, Dervla. You know, there was the Late Show on Friday night with Nell. Great performance.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, that was the first time I'd ever been in the Late Show. So it was really interesting because that's a whole other phenomenon.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
The it's different,
show.
Isn't it, when you're there in the
and
audience?
It's live.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, it's totally. It's completely. You don't actually. That was completely kind of bizarre too.
It's pinch yourself, Dervla.
Pinch myself, absolutely.
I'm going to read your son's quote here.
Okay.
This is truly a special moment for everyone involved in Aftersun. To be recognised by the Academy is such an insane honour, and I'm so utterly grateful. I want to dedicate this nomination to my two friends, Charlotte and Frankie, who I love dearly. This is bananas. Thank you.
Yes. I mean, what a film to be in, and what a co-star in Frankie.
Yeah.
And Charlotte, I mean, I obviously met them. She's just incredible and so gentle, like such a gentle person. I concur with all that. It is completely bananas.
Will you just give me
a
quick timeline, Dervla? Because I know it because we saw him in the Martin McDonagh play just before lockdown.
Lieutenant.
Yes.
Yes. So he left Ireland. I literally picked him up on O'Connell. So they finished their show at 2 o'clock. Their show, the matinee, was on the 12th.
Right, of March.
And then on the
2020.
Of March 2020.
Yeah.
He was due to be in the Irish Film Festival in London the following week. And at this point, Ireland had chosen to close down, but the world wasn't doing the same. You know, we weren't all following the same pattern. So he was going over to London. I literally picked him up on O'Connell Street, picked Dunica up from his student accommodation. Nell was in the car, and we drove to the airport. And it was totally, he left to go to London. And then he was in lockdown, and obviously normal people came out in the middle of all that. And really.
Now, you have to include now the video for the Rolling Stones.
That's just in the middle of all that. And yes. Oh, sorry. I mean, that was like that. Now, look. I'm actually watching that program, The Mega Build, that was about the hotel that he was and what they were doing. That's really interesting as well. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Sorry.
Yeah.
But it was, I couldn't believe he was in that hotel doing this crazy, you know, rock and roll.
Yeah. Lip syncing to Mick Jagger's vocals.
Exactly.
Well, listen, I don't know how you enjoy it or what you do. Do you sit with it or what do you do now? You've no experience.
We've no experience. Yeah. And all I know is that it's wonderful to have those family. I mean, everybody who has children away, family WhatsApp is just the business. And when you do that video call and everybody can be on it, you don't actually care what the news is going to be because you just want to see their faces.
Yeah.
And for me, to see his face and see him so shocked and so joyous and so grateful. I'm very grateful. I'm going to get emotional. Very grateful. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
No, but it is. It's emotional. It is. It's, you're like, there's you must be so proud. Like, it's,
I'm very, very proud. But I think people who have children doing anything, and it doesn't matter if they're children or the people you love, you move mountains for them because you want them to achieve. And in whatever they're doing, accountancy, whatever it is, you just want them to be as happy as they can be. And like Paul at 7:30 tonight will go on stage and be Stanley, and the love of his life is theatre, and he'll just come to life and be on stage tonight. And so, you know, get on with your job.
He might have a little bit of a pep. He might have a little bit of a pep in his step, do you think?
Yes, with his wonderful cast over there.
Yeah, Fiddler on the Roof, isn't it? Fiddler is it?
It's Streetcar Named Desire.
Oh, Streetcar Named. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, Streetcar Named Desire. Yes. Well, listen. Lovely talking to you.
You too.
Enjoy this unique experience. Which are Oscar-nominated son, Paul Meskin. Thanks, terribly.
Thank you so much. Bye.
That's lovely. Now we go back down to Rathmines, to the Stella Cinema, and we should have Cleona Ní Chruaillí, who produced the movie on Colin Kuhn, along with the star, Coit, played by Catherine Clinch. Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
How do you feel about the Oscar nomination?
I'm so excited. I'm so grateful as well to be part of it.
Yeah. We met before in studio and I told you when I met you that you did so brilliantly well. Little did we think then that we'd be talking about an Oscar nomination and you travelling over and been in the audience and with all those other people. Have you thought about that?
It's crazy. I had no idea, and even to like seconds before I found out, I still didn't expect it to happen. I mean, I'm just trying not to get my hopes up, but it's amazing, and I'm so happy.
Yeah, excited. Yeah, it is. It is amazing. And Cleona is there beside you. Hello, Cleona.
Hi, Ray.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a bit overwhelming at the moment. You know, it hasn't really sunk in, I don't think.
I was talking to Colm, I was trying to get the atmosphere there before the announcement, because there you are, you've worked intensely and very hard with this group of people, cast and crew, and you're waiting for this big announcement that could change all your lives. What are people giggly, or is there silence, or what's going on?
Definitely not silence, I agree. I suppose we were a bit worried, you know, bringing everybody together today, you know, because it could have been a big anticlimax if we didn't get nominated. But we kind of felt, well, look, the film has achieved so much in the past year. You know, we have so much to celebrate, especially just getting nominated for the BAFTAs as well on Thursday, you know.
Mm.
So I mean, it was, the atmosphere was just incredible. Even before we went in to watch the nominations, you know, everybody was just in such great spirits, and you know, it was kind of almost a reunion of sorts, I suppose. And
yeah,
as Colin mentioned earlier, we never got to have a wrap party because, you know, it was in the middle of COVID, and you know, so this is our wrap party. Yeah. And you couldn't have thought of a better time to have a wrap party.
Yeah, and of course there was the sort of supporting cast were there. Kerry Condon was announced, and I'm sure there was a big cheer for that. And you know, so Banshees was there in a supporting role, and then your announcement came along, so it was yes. I'll just play that again because people need to be reminded of the reaction when it was announced that Colin Keane was nominated for an Oscar, the first movie Oscar I'll get to be nominated ever in the Best International Picture category. It clocks in at 40 seconds. That's what we have. And I think it goes on longer because they just stopped recording. So it was just joyous, joyous. So what's the plan now? How do you continue your celebrations, Cleona?
I think we're going to be here for a while anyway. Like, all the gang are upstairs having drinks and having a bit of food and just celebrating. And, you know, everybody's hugging each other and just... we're just really so, so happy, you know. It's just such a feat that has been accomplished today, I think, you know. And it's been such a long journey as well. We've worked on this campaign, the Oscars and the BAFTAs campaign, really for a good 5 months now. So we've been on the road, travelling the world with the film. And, you know, it's just so nice then that we're all together now for this special moment, and that it just went our way today, you know. And it needn't have gone either, you know.
Talk to me about that young lady beside you. You know, like you found a star, didn't you?
She is an absolute star. Yeah, Catherine Clinch. Like, I don't think anybody will ever forget Catherine Clinch's name. And I remember when her first audition tape came in, you know, I think it was May 2020. And, you know, that was a very special moment for myself and Colin when we first saw that audition tape. And we thought, wow, this young girl is incredible. And we just felt so pleased that we had found someone so amazing in Catherine, you know. And I remember being on set, you know, there's many a day on the shoot when Catherine would get a round of applause from everybody that was there. People were just blown away by her performance, you know, and even, you know, just the chemistry between her and Andrew Bennett and Carrie Crowley, you know, there was just something very special, something very powerful happening. And I think people felt that at the time, that there was a special quality to the whole thing, and that kind of just continued on then, you know. And so happy for Catherine, you know. And the film wouldn't be the film that it is without her.
No. Catherine, you go to school quite close to the Stella, don't you?
Yeah.
So do you have to go back in now, or have you got the rest of the day off?
No, school's almost over for me anyways.
Yes. Yeah. So what about tomorrow morning when you go in and you say, hey, I'm part of an Oscar-nominated movie. How about that?
I don't know. I have rehearsals for the school play tonight, so I'll be seeing people even sooner than that. And
what's the play?
The Sound of Music.
Ah, and what part do you play?
I'm Marta von Trapp.
Ah, yes. Is she the... where is she now in the Von Trapps? She the
She's
eldest?
No. Second youngest.
Second youngest, right.
Yeah.
What's your favourite song from it?
I don't know. I mean, I love them all, really. They're so much fun to be in it, to be honest.
High on a hill is a lonely girl. I won't ask you to sing it. Don't worry. Listen, Catherine Clinch, congratulations. Cleanly Cruelly, congratulations. Cohortics to you both. Well done.
Germain Margaret.
Slán. And we've one more person to talk to down the Stella. But first, to the phone lines we go. And to Sheila Flitton, Mrs. McCormack, the Banshee from The Banshees of Inisherin, the title role. Hello, Sheila.
Hi, Ray. Yeah. I don't know what you want to talk to me about. It's all being said. It's amazing. Wait till I tell you, the Irish film, I mean, I have to congratulate him. I mean, what an achievement. Mm. And Tally Crowley is one of my best friends. I want to make special congratulations. But to all of them, my God. And they're all over in the Stella. Where are all we? Where are we?
All over the world is where ye are.
Yeah.
But I tell you.
Yeah, that's where we are. That's exactly where we are.
Yeah, Sheila, Pat Short is on the other line. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm great, Ray. Hello, Sheila. How are you?
Hiya, love. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Thank you. Great.
Pat, isn't this what a day?
Listen, it's amazing, and I think Sheila's right, Colm and Cleona there with Colin Kuhn, everybody, I mean, the Banshees has blown things away, but you have to say that's just remarkable.
Yes.
And makes it very emotional for everybody in the industry. It's fantastic, we're all delighted for them.
Yeah. Where were you in the car? Where were you watching them?
I had to pick up a van in Sligo this morning. The job goes on, Ray, for the production company and the theatre company in Limerick. I had to pick up the van because the other one broke down at the weekend. So I was screaming my head off coming down the N70.
That's brilliant. You had to go to collect a van. Very glamorous, very glamorous. Listen, Pat, I was saying to Sheila, because we had Sheila in last week, that she has the title role, doesn't she?
Yeah.
In the Banshees of Inisherin. Had you worked with Sheila before, Pat?
No, it was my first time working with Sheila. I was well aware of her and in various different productions and stuff, but it was first time working with her. I was really looking forward to it. It was lovely. And Sheila probably, like, it was quite a small cast in Banshees, actually. You know, I think there was only about 11 of us in total.
Right.
So we were in the rehearsal room together and staying in the same hotel and all that. So it was lovely. It was great. And there's something nice about being away on location as well, because you do get to meet people for a drink and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Whereas when you're in Dublin, maybe everyone goes home and you never really meet people. So there was that lovely kind of buzz on Banshees like that. It was great crack. And actually, not a lot of people are talking about, but the SAG Awards are on the 26th of February. And that's the Screen Actors Guild of America. And the whole cast of Banshees has been nominated for Ensemble Cast, which is the biggest award in the industry. And we're up against five other films. But I think, according to Variety or Hollywood Reporter, that ourselves and one other film are hotly tipped in the race for the two of us. So that's a big, I think, stamp of approval on the cast, you know, it being fantastic. But look, it's the crew, it's everybody. Sheila would tell you the same. When you get into the car, when you're picked up from the hotel by the drivers, if they're in good form, they put you in good form, you land onto this first eddies, second eddies. You know, it's such a collaborative thing, and Banshees is one of those beautiful films to work on.
And you say, like, small cast and four nominations.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal.
That
must be a record if you're going on percentages.
I mean, it is incredible. And for Brendan and Barry to be in Best Supporting together, that's incredible. I mean, but I'm so delighted for Kerry Condon. I just thought her performance and just the subtlety and everything about her performance and just the emotion she brought to it was incredible. And from the get-go, I've been saying she's definitely going to get a nomination for supporting actress, and I'm so happy that happened.
Yeah, right. And she stole a lot of the scenes, if that's what you say, in the acting world. I don't know. And as did you, Sheila. Sheila,
thank you.
Sheila, thanks again, and congratulations to you both. And we'll chat again, Sheila Flitton. Thank you so much. Pat
thank
Short.
Thank you very much. And congratulations to everybody involved.
Yes. Congratulations.
In Attle.
Bye. Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Sheila. Bye. Now, An Irish Goodbye was nominated in the short film category, and written and directed by Ross J. White and Tom Berkeley. And I think we have Tom or Ross on the line now. Hello, Ross.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Both. Ross and Tom, congratulations.
Thank you
so much.
People have to see this. I watched it at lunchtime there, and I loved it. I really loved it. It's so beautiful. It's just such an amazing movie, and not surprised that it got an Oscar nomination. So congratulations. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, because I don't know. Tom, tell us a bit about yourself.
So me and Ross met over in, I'm the sort of English half of this, we're an English-Irish kind of writer-director duo. I hope you let me stay on the line for that. So we met, coming up 10 years ago. We actually trained originally as actors, and then we were both kind of writing alongside our studies separately at that time, and then we kind of made the decision to write together and filmmaking together, and we left acting behind to sort of pursue that maybe about 3 years ago. And so An Irish Goodbye was actually the first script that we wrote together, and it was the second film that we ended up making. So yeah, it's been a crazy few years.
Yeah. Ross, will you tell people about Turlough and Lorcan?
Yeah, of course. So the film follows these two estranged brothers, Turlough and Lorcan, who are sort of reunited on their old family farm after the death of their mum. And they have this sort of fractious relationship, and they're sort of dealing with the grief and all of the aftermath of that when they find their mum's unfulfilled bucket list. And Lorcan, Turlough's younger brother, who has Down syndrome, refuses to sort of leave the farm and go into care arrangement until they've completed every single wish on their mum's list. And they're played brilliantly by Seamus O'Hara plays Turlough and James Martin plays Lorcan.
Yeah, you're right. Played brilliantly, and there's a lovely chemistry between the two lads, and it's just beautiful. Where can people see it? When and where? What?
Yeah, we're working away. Yeah, sorry, what's going on?
We're working away at that at the minute. We are working with the distributor, as Tom says, who we're looking to hopefully, well, you never know, get it on with yourselves, RTE, get it out to everybody so we can all watch it on the telly, and hopefully some cinema screenings as well. But if folks want to keep up to date with it, they can check out the social medias on An Irish Goodbye Film, and we've got a wee mailing list as well where people can hear about sort of wider release in the spring, hopefully.
I'm not saying that this is going to happen to you, but it's a good omen, because close on 20 years ago, Martin McDonagh won an Oscar in the best short for Six Shooter. So I'll be talking to you again in 20 years' time.
If it goes half as well as that, we'll be happy.
Don't forget us, Tom and Ross. You know, take the call. And listen, congratulations on An Irish Goodbye. It's truly a beautiful movie. Thank you very much. See you, lads. Bye.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Bye.
Back to the Stella we go, where the cast and crew of Uncolly Q gathered today to watch the Oscar nominations. Carrie Crowley, good afternoon.
Oh, Ray, how are you? I'm a little bit emotional.
Yes.
I didn't think I would be. I kind of thought, oh, if we get it, we get it. If we don't, it doesn't matter. We just had such an amazing time making it. And when they announced it, we literally all went bananas and wept, you know. It was just one of those extraordinary moments to kind of realise, oh my God, this film is going to America. This film, well, it's going to America to play, but this film is up for an Oscar. How amazing is that?
Well, it's very, very amazing. It's out of this world amazing. It's no surprise, because, you know, it's brilliant. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, because I thought, even when we were making it, I thought, this is so special. There was just something beautiful about it. But the fact that the rest of the world have realised that as well, that's really amazing. And then that we're part of this green wave, because what else can you call it? It's incredible. And we were here watching all the other nominations coming up, and we hollered and hooped every time it was An Irish Connection. And with Banshees, and then After Sun for Paul Mescal, who's so brilliant in it, and then The Irish Goodbye. And you kind of think, oh, can we be part of this wave? Or will they then say, yeah, that's probably enough Irish, man. We'll go somewhere else. But they came to us, you know. It's amazing.
And for T.G. Cahir and, you know, the whole Irish-speaking community and the language, it's a big day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But what I would say as well about T.G. Cahir and Cine Cahir, which is how all these films have been made, like Aracht and Fusca, and like brilliant work has been done because T.G. Cahir had the balls to give money for independent filming, for films that nobody else would have made or would have funded down through the years. Now they're being made and they're all successful. Look at Roshogus Frank Freshen. Look at the films that have come out from the Cine Cahir scheme or the T.G. Cahir schemes. Like, it's amazing.
It is.
And people, this is what I love as well. People have said to me, oh God, I didn't think I'd any Irish. And then they love the films because everybody has it. It's like it's in your gut somewhere. Mm. And people just have to believe that it's in the gut and that they will understand and they will love it.
14 Oscar nominations for The Irish. just stay there, Carrie Crowley, because on the other line, we have an Irish Oscar winner, Brenda Fricker.
God.
Brenda Fricker's on the other line.
Stop.
Yeah. How are you, Brenda?
How are you? You sound like you're 1,000 miles away.
Sorry. We're only up the road. Listen, Carrie Crowley's on the other line, Brenda,
Hello, Brenda.
On Colin Kuhn.
Oh, gosh, I know Carrie, but we said that night that it was absolutely brilliant film.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, thanks,
you know,
Brenda.
I'm just hugging her and kissing her and saying how wonderful she was and how wonderful that child was. And overall, it was the most delicate and beautiful film which you carried home with you. Yeah. You didn't jump up and down on the steps of the cinema, you know.
Yeah.
You just took it home quietly and stayed in your head for a week and you were thinking this and thinking, I love films like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Brenda, to hear you say that. But you're right. It's like the feeling that remains, and it's there, it's inside you, yeah.
And how it's gorgeous. So difficult to get that across, that particular feeling, to the audience.
Mm.
And to I think it's like almost if you were at a concert and you played so well that people couldn't clap, you know?
<That's>
they were mesmerised by the whole
yeah.
thing. That was the kind of feeling I got in Croon, because I was right out in the front. Do you remember with my friend?
I remember exactly where you were.
In the front. You looking stunning. Yeah. And me in an old pair of jeans and a T-shirt, I think.
And, but you were still Brenda Fricker, darling. And I didn't wash my face after you kissed me.
Ah, go away. But I do remember when it was over and feeling something slowly coming at me, like through the film. And then when it was over, I just didn't want to talk to Liz or you or anything else. I might have been polite and said that was lovely, but I wanted to just take the whole thing home very quietly and for me to think about it, to work it out, the end, the beginning and the middle, and make up my own conclusions. And I think that's the best way you can make a film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stays with
it's
you.
It's all about that. Yeah, touch the person. Get at the person. Get inside the head, you know?
Brenda Fricker, what a day for Irish filmmaking.
Ash, you stop, will you? Nine for Banshee.
Yes.
Nine.
That's beats In the Name of the Father by two. My
well,
Left
we
Foot.
Got five. We got five.
Five and 1-2, yourself and Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, but we got five, which at the time was like, nobody'd heard of Ireland.
Yes.
You know, yeah. We're going back. How long is it now since 1989?
It's 24 years. No, 34 years. 34 years. 34 years.
34 years. So if you go back that far, we hadn't tuppence to make the film. It was being cancelled every day because I was in London with Daniel. He was in London. And we were flying back and forth and we'd go home and Noel Pearson, the producer, would we film for a day or 2 days, and then we ran out of money, we'd all work in London again, and then we'd find a bit of money, and then Noel mortgaged his house for a second time.
Yeah.
We got a bit of money. And we just managed to pull together the film.
Mm. And so
you made an exquisite job of it, Brent. It was just such an incredible
film. That was Jim Sheridan, and he should have won. We missed Best Picture by one vote.
Is that true? I'd never heard that.
The film that won was actually Driving Miss Daisy.
Ah.
And it was the right one to make. It was kind of a sort of a celebration of Tessica Chand. She was playing the lead and she was 84. She was brilliant.
Right.
She'd had an amazing career.
Brenda, that's not a brilliant line, okay? I do want to talk to you. We will talk about this because, even talking about 1998 and My Left Foot, and you bring me right back there. So I want to talk to you, but it's a bad line. So we're gonna let you go. Carrie Crowley, congratulations again.
All right, honey.
and Brenda, hugs and kisses to you. And we'll talk to you soon. Good luck to you both.
Okay.
And we have to take a quick commercial break. There you go.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're playing catch up, but it is an historic day, so we don't mind. Mary Galler has been on. I agree so much with Brenda Fricker. Often I only know just how much I really enjoyed a movie in the days after and whether I'm still thinking about the story. And Colin Kuhn was certainly one of those movies, as was My Left Foot. Congrats to all. A great day for Irish filmmaking. And Claire Keegan, the author, deserves a mention for the novella that brought us here. Such a wonderful day for Irish art and film. That's Anne-Marie Kennedy. And of course, on Colin Kuhn is based on Foster, by Claire Keegan. Paul Hennessy says, easy to see why Paul Mescal is doing so well. His mum is a normal woman with no notions. She's no notions. Congrats. Mrs. Mescal is such a lovely lady. Beautiful emotions, says Carl. And what a refreshingly lovely, unaffected, quiet Irish girl. You see, quiet. Well done, Catherine Clinch. You are brilliant. So there, and lots more coming in too. We better tell you about our quiz late, but better late than never. Who done a quiz? Yes, the Who Done a Quiz. We're looking for two of you quite soon, actually, after 4 o'clock, to come on and answer three Who Done a questions on music, sport, books, politics, comedy, actually anything that involves human endeavour is up for grabs. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you go for a clue, you get one. If you go without a clue, you get two. And there is a prize. And this week, it's thank you very much to the people in the iconic K Club in County Kildare. They're giving us a two-night stay at the five-star country resort, which is flavour-fueled. So throughout your culinary escape, you'll enjoy a hearty breakfast in the elegant, sumptuous surroundings of the Barton. Later, you'll meander across the resort's winding greens to the clubhouse for fabulous food, fine cocktails and great stories over dinner in the Palmer. Then, the following day, you can book in for a lively brunch surrounded by a buzzing atmosphere and a touch of mischief in the new South Bar and Restaurant. TheKClub.ie. Here is your qualifying question. Which prestigious award ceremony announced their shortlist today? Which prestigious award ceremony announced their shortlist today? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, very busy week for students right across the country as many return to campus. But what is day-to-day life like for a student in 2023? I definitely don't know. I don't know about you. Joining me now is the welfare officer in UCD, University College Dublin, Mida Nick in Leoch.
Hiya.
How are you? I had to take a run at that. I've never encountered a Nick in Leoch before. So is there, there's no English version of it or?
Not that I use anyway.
No, yeah, sorry, there you go. So you're from out in Connemara near Carrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on Conning Cune, must have made the news out there.
Ah, yeah, definitely. It's fantastic to see Irish language films be featured on the international stage, especially like we have such good actors who act through Irish, and it's fantastic to see them get that recognition. Like,
yeah. So to the reason you're in, Mida, welfare officer in University College Dublin. Is it a full-time role? Or
yeah, full-time. Yeah. Some would say more than full-time.
Right, okay.
Definitely full-time.
So you're studying law and social justice and you take a year out, is that it?
Yeah, or you can do it at the end of your degree. So I finished up my 4 years and ran to become...
Oh, right, so you're finished your degree?
Yeah.
Ah, nice way of doing it, isn't it?
Handy enough.
Yeah. So how many students are in UCD?
About 33,000. Yeah, quite the number.
Isn't it?
Yeah, something else. That's more... bigger than most towns.
Yes, you are. I was just going to say that. You're bigger than the population of Clonmel.
Yeah. Yes, quite a broad spread as well. Like you get all sorts through the door, which is great.
Yeah. And you are responsible for all of those people's welfare.
Yeah, more or less.
Yes. So what's your job description?
Basically advocating for students on all kind of welfare issues, so non-academic issues. So that would be everything from mental health to physical health to housing to finances and kind of everything in between. So pretty broad remit.
And I suppose it's not like a town because the majority of those 33,000 are between the ages of 18 and 25.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a particular time in people's lives. There's
Absolutely.
A lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And that throws up its own unique, I suppose, problems and issues.
Yeah, 100%. Like people are kind of maybe living on their own for the first time for a lot of mental health issues or anything like that. Most of them crop up during that time in someone's life for the first time. So it has its own unique challenges that you maybe wouldn't see in Clonmel.
Yeah. It's interesting because, yes, people have moved up from the country, a lot of people, haven't they?
Yeah.
And as you say, they're living on their own for the first time. They have to fend for themselves financially, even just feeding themselves. They don't have that support of going home and crying on their mum's or dad's shoulder, all of those things. And you become probably the surrogate parents in some respect, do you?
I wouldn't put it in that kind of dynamic.
Right,
very much a peer-to-peer thing
okay.
of we're all going through this together. We understand what you're going through. We're just students as well. And we know that X, Y, Z isn't fair, isn't right, and we should be trying to work on something, and we're here to support you whatever way we can.
So let's go through some of the main issues. Well, the one that hit the headlines at the beginning of this school term, or no, the last, as in this year, this academic year, was accommodation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what was going on there?
It was pretty grim, I'm not going to lie. So basically, the last several years, students' unions and student groups have been crying out for more affordable student accommodation. They've been saying that rents have been getting higher, it's harder to find somewhere to live. And this September was worse than any other year, by far, where people who would have, even those who had means and money and landlords' references and everything you could name under the sun, couldn't find anywhere. And that meant that socioeconomically disadvantaged students and students that didn't have all that backing had it even worse than ever. So it was pretty grim stuff.
How many people can be accommodated on campus?
In UCG, we have about 4,000 beds on campus.
Okay, so so there's another 29,000 then. Then a sizable number would live in the Dublin area. How far from your work do people commute to UCD? How far away?
Well, we did an accommodation survey before Christmas. We're putting together a report on the results. But it seems that anecdotally, in the last semester, we've heard from students that are travelling 6 hours a day return. Students commuting from Tipperary to UCD, from Galway, from Belfast.
You're joking.
No, I wish I was. Because they can't find anywhere to live. It's cheaper for them to commute, or the book stops there. If they can't find somewhere to stay in Dublin, they just have to travel.
Well, that's that. You see, how can you possibly then do what you're supposed to be doing academically if you're travelling 6 hours a day?
Exactly. Like, focusing on your studies when you're just up at the crack of dawn, back at 12 o'clock at night, it's just not possible.
That's no life.
And as well, like, I think most people who've been to college would agree that most important things you learn in college, you learn outside of the classroom. Yeah. You learn going, getting involved in clubs and societies and making friends and just kind of learning a bit about who you are.
Wasn't it Newman who wrote that essay on the value of a university education?
Absolutely, yeah.
And it wasn't the academic side, it was everything else.
Yeah, and they're missing out on that.
Yeah, because they are formative years. You're becoming an adult.
Yeah, and you see the knock-on effects on people's financial situation, on people's mental health from that, because that's going to take its toll.
Hmm. And what happens then if somebody presents to you with a mental health difficulty?
Just chat to them. I'm not a counsellor.
No,
I'm not a mental health professional.
Yes.
But just try and connect them to whatever services they may need. Sometimes people need a listening ear and sometimes people need something more. And we do our best to link them up. We have a fantastic counselling service in UCD. And student health as well are fantastic in dealing with people who have mental health issues. But the problem is you've 33,000 students, you've a handful of counsellors, you've a handful of doctors, and there's just not enough service provision for them to be able to provide the care to everyone who needs it.
Right. And students are away from home for the first time, so there's probably a good bit of sex going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And with sex comes, you know, STIs, etc. And do people talk openly about that sort of thing, or is it still a bit of a taboo thing?
I think it's better than it was. I do think around STIs, there's still a fair bit of stigma because, again, sexual health, that's my remit. I'm the one handing out condoms. But we had Shag Week last semester and we were talking about all things, be that sex toys, be that how to get an STI check, and everything in between. And I did notice that kind of when you bring up the, would you like an STI leaflet? And everyone kind of giggles and is like, oh no, I don't need that. And it's like, well, better to have and not need it than need it and not have it. And there's a lot of misconceptions as well when it comes to sexual health that, you know, if you're having sex regularly, if you have a new partner, if one of your partners has a new partner, you should be getting an STI test, because most of them are asymptomatic until they're not. And it's better to catch things early.
And we know that people are being delivered into universities with very scant sex education.
Absolutely. Yeah. None of it's up to scratch, and we're always bridging the gap at third level because of that. There are fantastic services. There is information out there, but it's giving people the access to it. Like, we have home STI test kits that are sent to your house by the HSE. You do it in the comfort of your own home. You send it off.
The privacy probably is the most important thing for a lot of people, yes.
It's a fantastic, fantastic service, but it's really important that people use it.
I'm just thinking about your man Tate and toxic masculinity and consent and you know, casual sort of banter that isn't really casual banter. It could be bullying or whatever. How do you cope with that sort of thing? Or is the world different than when I was going to university?
It's always a tricky topic, because when it comes to interpersonal issues with people, people tend to get a bit defensive if you're told, hey, what you said wasn't all right, or hey, maybe the way that person acts isn't okay. People tend to view it as
So you're talking about calling somebody out.
Yeah.
It is difficult to call anybody out, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's difficult to be called out. And I think it's something everyone, I hope everyone wants to exist in kind of open, respectful, empathetic societies. Or we should be striving towards that.
Yes, yeah.
And part of that is being wrong sometimes and being able to I refuse to accept that, being open to being corrected. Part of being a bystander isn't just interfering, throwing punches, and part of it is just having a word with someone, being like, oh, maybe you shouldn't say that word, or maybe you should try speak to that person a bit more kindly.
And it is about men talking about women and men talking about men, because we can be quite mean, men can't they? And slagging, which is an Irish sort of pastime, sometimes crosses the line into bullying.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing when you look at it, when it kind of comes to masculinity, and it's like, oh, if you can't take a joke, that's on you and that's on your masculinity. And part of the fun of slagging, part of the fun of having banter, is that everyone's laughing.
Yes.
Like, and if you're always slagging the same person, if they're always not laughing, then the fun's not really there.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. So that's really interesting. So if everyone isn't laughing, then it's not probably slagging or banter.
Yeah.
You need to think about the person who isn't laughing in the room. Sorry, you can blame the Oscars and Martin McDonagh and Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell but I'm sure we'll talk again. Mita, Nick, in Leoch, Gormagot, and we'll talk again.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gormagot Cart, thank you very much. And we have to say thank you as well to Sinead Ní Uachtaráin. She was a representative down at the Stella Cinema in Rathmines. She was there to get us all, the cast and crew of An Colleen Kuhn. So Gormagot, Sinead, did a great job. Sounded great. Now, it's time for our Whodunit quiz. Yep, we have two quizzers standing by ready to answer three whodunit questions on various things: music, sport, books, politics, comedy, changes from day to day. If you go for a clue, you get one. Without a clue, you get two. And there's a prize, and it's a culinary weekend away for two at the iconic K Club in County Kildare. So it's a two-night stay, and then you can go around and feast yourself. Flavour-fuelled two-night stay. So you have a hearty breakfast in the Barton, then you'll meander across to the resort's winding greens to the clubhouse for fabulous food in the Palmer, and then the next day you can have brunch in the South Bar and Restaurant, which is new, kclub.ie, kclub.ie. Hello, Audrey Scully in Mallow.
Hi Ray, how are you?
Good. You're on your way home from work.
That's right, yeah, just now.
Yeah, and what can you tell us what you do?
I'm Moon Tour, yeah.
Ah, go on, what?
Yeah.
primary or secondary?
Secondary.
Yeah, and what do you teach?
I teach Irish, actually, in German.
Ah, yeah. Right. And you haven't seen An Colleen Kuhn yet? Ha, ha, ho!
I haven't. It's on the list. No, not yet.
Yeah. Well, it's on the streaming services now, so you could bring it in for a Friday afternoon and let the pupils see it as well with you.
Sounds good, yeah.
On the whiteboard. Can't you play films on the whiteboard now?
Yeah, we can. We've the projectors and all.
Yeah, the whole lot. There you go.
Yeah.
It might be a nice thing to watch together, because not only is the language there, but there's also themes to be discussed.
You know, very good.
Yeah. Have you seen The Banshees?
I did, yeah. I loved it. Very good. Yeah.
It's a big day. It's lovely. It's just, I feel so proud. I don't know about you.
Yeah, mighty day. Yeah. Mighty.
But you still have to go home and make the dinner.
what's
on the menu tonight?
We're going to go chili con carne tonight.
Great. And do you eat before the under 13 soccer training or after?
We'll eat before us. I'd say it's on late-ish tonight.
Right, okay.
And
you're planning to make some Bridget's crosses as well?
Well, that would be maybe next week now in the primary school. We can supply the rushes, and the boys usually make them in school. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have that day off, thanks to St. Bridget.
Yeah.
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 Well done, St. Bridget. but remember, it was always, I always found it very long between, you know, the break, the Christmas break, and St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, it's one of the longest ones.
Isn't it? Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think maybe September is, and into October is long, but at least you have the long evenings and all that sort of thing. But it can be tough getting through January and February. But now we have that bank holiday, which is great. You're up against Michael Gormley in Rathfarnham in Dublin. How are you doing, Michael?
Good afternoon.
Great. Great day for the Irish.
It absolutely is. It's great news.
Yeah, great news. You're on dinner duty as well.
I am indeed.
Right. Who are you cooking for?
I'm cooking for my two daughters and my son.
Right.
So it's a little bit busy.
So what are you cooking?
It's very simple: chicken, vegetables, and potato. Nothing too fancy with me.
Right. Yeah, but is it roast chicken or what way are you doing it?
No, it's kind of done in the pot and it's all done together like a stew and with rice on the side.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So it's a one pot wonder.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. And how do you thicken up the do you put a bit of flour in it or a bit of pesto?
In this particular one, it's turmeric, actually.
Is it? Oh, is it? Oh, no, right.
Yeah,
right.
A little bit fancy.
Yeah. So two daughters, what age are they?
Yes. My daughter is 20, she's in UCD, and then I have a daughter who's 10 and she's in primary school. And then I have a son who's 16, he's in secondary.
Yeah, so that's a nice busy house.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. Right. You know the deal on the Whodunit quiz.
Yes.
I'll tell you the category, Audrey and Michael, and then you can tell me if you want to take a clue. So you might be strong on some categories and weak on others, so you might go with a clue. If you go with a clue, it's easier, obviously, so you get a point for that. If you decide that you're strong in a particular category and don't take a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. Okay? Good luck to you both. Here we go. Audrey, first category is music. Do you want a clue? Oh.
I'll chance without one.
Okay. Who is this, Audrey? Oh, Maggie, I
couldn't have tried. Rod Stewart?
You say? Rod Stewart is
Rod
correct.
Stewart?
Yeah, we listen to the rest of it, will we? Yeah. Here we go. Just to save you from being alone. You stole my soul and that's a pain I can do without. It is indeed. Rod Stewart, 2 points for you. Well done, Audrey. Now, Michael, music for you as well.
I'll have to go without as well, I guess.
Go without. Okay. Who is this? And you can let it play out and tell us the answer at the end, just before the Claxton. Learning from each other's knowing, looking to see how much we've grown, and the only one who could ever reach me, for the son of a preacher man. Who's that?
Wow.
No. Dusty Springfield, son of a preacher man.
Okay, we've never got it.
Okay, rightio. Early enough days. Audrey, back to you. Our second category today is sport. So, do you want to...
I'll chance it out.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Who is this sporting person?
Oh, it's just fantastic, you know. I just can't wait to get back home, sit on the couch to sleep the rest. I'm absolutely exhausted, to be honest. I mean, I'm like a fluffy pigeon going around. I'm that grey at this stage. I am. What a journey, and It's just fantastic, you know, absolutely fantastic.
Who's that?
I think Kelly Harrington.
It is Kelly Harrington. I'm winning gold at the Tokyo Olympics. Well done. So another 2 points. Michael, Audrey has forced your hand.
I have to go short.
You
okay.
have to go short. Okay. Who is this sporting person?
If you look at some of the best players in the history of the game, they've been only children. Like Faldo, Tiger, myself. I'm not comparing myself to them in any way, but I think there is a trend. Spending time on your own and being comfortable in your own company, I think that's something that is very important in life.
Who's that?
Is it Rory McIlroy?
It is Rory McIlroy, yes. Well done on being an only child. 2 points. You're not out of it yet, Michael. Not out of
okay,
it yet.
Thank you.
Audrey, you're on 4, Michael's on 2. So if you get anything from your final question, you're today's winner. However, if you don't get anything and then Michael goes without a clue and gets it right, we're into a tie-break situation. So what do you want to do?
Which, can you tell me the category for?
Oh, sorry, no? Yes. Yeah, you know the rules better than I do. Animated movies. Sorry, it's animated movies.
Okay, I'll try without.
Well, you don't have to, you see. Because it's,
I know, yeah.
But you just want to get a clean sheet, do you? Okay.
The tiebreaker might go wrong.
No, listen to me again now, Audrey. Michael, know, you don't mind if I remind
you. There is a tiebreaker.
Absolutely not. She's done very well so far.
Okay, so Audrey, if you get anything from this, you're today's winner. Michael can't catch you.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll take a clue.
Yeah, okay. Right. He also played the role of an inspirational teacher. He told his class to carpe diem. Who is this?
What's your name?
Aladdin.
Aladdin! Hello, Aladdin. Nice to have you on the show. Can we call you Al? Or maybe just Din? Or how about Lottie? Sounds like, here, boy. Come on, Lottie. Yo, Rockman. Haven't seen you in a few millennia. Give me some cash, Al. Yeah, yo. Say, you're a lot smaller than my last master. Either that or I'm getting bigger. Look at me from the side. Do I look different to you?
Who's that?
Robin Williams.
It is Robin Williams as the genie in Disney's Aladdin. There you go. You get a point. Michael, you can't catch her.
Okay, no problem. Yeah. Well done, Audrey.
Yeah, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks. Sorry about the mix-up there earlier.
Oh, no. It was Dussie Springfield that cut you out. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. And
lovely.
Good luck with the turmeric chicken. And nice talking to you. Okay.
Thank you.
See you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Audrey! And the Oscar for no Audrey. Yeah, so, you were going to the K Club, you and a person of your choice, for a flavour fueled 2-night stay at the 5-star country resort. Yeah, nice. KClub.ie to see what's in store for you. Well done, Audrey.
Brilliant.
Mind
Thank
yourself.
You.
Good luck. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're going to be talking to James Kavanagh and William Murray in a moment, but here's a song I had lined up for the beginning of the show. We didn't get around to it, so here it is. Yay! There you go, the Pogues and Fiesta! That's what the Oscar's going to be like this year. 14 Irish nominations. That's the 6 in the morning sounds. Now, time to chat food. James Kavanagh and William Murray are here, founders of Currabinny Food. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah, you've a colour.
I do. Yeah. I'm just off a cruise. I was in the caravan.
I don't have a colour.
He does not. He's been working in the caravan, keeping the money
Someone
coming in
behind.
So I can go on the cruise.
Right.
Yeah.
do you know what? I'm very boring. I like museums and cities and walking around. I cruise would be my nightmare. So I was happy to see him.
Yeah.
I love
and I
burn,
so it wouldn't be.
How long was it?
It was 8 days. First ever cruise. I was unsure when I was going into it because you're either a cruise person or you're not. That's what they say. I think I'm a cruise person now. Like by day three, I just got into the routine of getting up sunbathing. Yeah, and you're kind of, it's like a gorgeous retirement village or something. You're kind of moving around the ship with your eating. Then you go back here. Then you go here. You dock somewhere. I loved the routine.
Where did you dock?
We went to Cozumel in Mexico. It was all around the Caribbean and
the Cayman Islands.
The Cayman Islands, which was beautiful. And it was 30
Bermuda?
Degrees.
Bermuda? No.
Didn't go to Bermuda.
Right.
Isn't that kind of dodgy? You sink there, Bermuda Triangle or something?
Yeah,
is that myth?
It's a makey up thing. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Right. No, we didn't go near there, fortunately.
So you'd recommend the cruise
thing?
Yeah,
I had a ball.
Right.
And look at the colour of me.
Yeah.
It was good tanning weather.
I would have been red if I come. I don't tan.
So you were manning the Currabinny caravan.
I was, yeah. When Wednesday to Sunday we're open there, so it's a full shebang that we do.
Where are you?
We're in Collins Barracks in the museum there, in the National Museum, in the courtyard. So if you, it's actually a really nice place, and it's kind of an undiscovered museum. I don't think a lot
and
of
it's
people.
It's free.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So I suppose the food trucks came into their own during lockdown.
Yes,
because exactly. Out of necessity.
Yeah,
the people who had bricks and mortar moved into the, but they're around for good now, aren't they?
I think so. Like if you look at other European cities, the food truck culture is huge in any sort of, you know, if you go to Berlin, if you go to London, even there's loads. That's the Borough Market, and everyone has food trucks out there. I think we're kind of late to the game, and the pandemic kind of. You know, if you're looking at good parts of it, birthed loads of people trying out food trucks, but no one's really strayed away from them yet. They're still thriving, which is great.
We were like the last people in Ireland to have a food truck,
and it was in a queue.
Holy Christ!
Yeah, at
the back of the queue.
Last.
We actually forgot that we bought a food truck at one point, and then suddenly we got a call being like, "It's ready,"
and the world's back to normal. So we were like, "Oh no, people are going to be eating in cafes again."
Missed the wave, but no, people are still out and about and going to get their coffees. I think it's a thing that hasn't. Disappeared.
And it's very specific, I would imagine, you know, putting the menu together, because you're limited with space.
Absolutely. And even limited, like at the moment I don't have like an oven or gas or anything like that, so everything has to be on a grill or on a stovetop. You know, I can't bake anything, so you kind of have to start being clever with how you do things. And of course there's a lot of things like pickling and preserving and fermenting, because these are all things you can do to make ingredients last longer and increase the shelf life of things, especially with the cost of ingredients now. You know, you kind of have to find clever ways of dealing with.
So you've got into pickling.
Definitely, yeah. We're big picklers.
So, just
at the weekend.
He's like a crazy Frankenstein scientist in the house. There's all these jars of the most insane looking things that are being pickled.
So what do you pickle cucumber, don't you?
There's so many different types of pickling. So say in the case of a cucumber, you'd do it like a quick pickle, because you wouldn't want to lose the crunch of a cucumber, and it's such a fresh ingredient. And those kind of pickles don't last as long, but you want to kind of capture them just for a moment. But then like things like root veg, carrots,
rainbow chard.
Yeah,
is gorgeous.
Things like that. You might do a hot pickle, use a hot brine, which will obviously kill more of the bacteria, so they will last for months and months, even years.
In a tightly sealed
and sterilized jar. Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, pickling, I'd imagine, was developed because back in the day we didn't have refrigeration and people
Absolutely.
Had to work around it.
Yeah.
So they had to have vegetables when they were out of season.
Exactly, so So fermenting, pickling, canning, all these processes.
What's the difference between fermenting and pickling?
So fermenting would, say, like with the case of cabbage, that would have its own, a lot of its own moisture, a lot of its own liquid. So you would only need to add, like, say, salt, and then it releases its own juices.
So that's fermenting, is it?
Yeah, and there's a process that goes on. I'm not a chemist or a scientist, but it's something to do with lactoformation. Fermentation, and it produces its own sort of biome. Yeah, it produces its own sort of preserving liquid. While other things won't produce their own, so you have to introduce like a vinegar or a solution that will do that for you. Yeah,
yeah. And if you get them right, and they become your signature on a sandwich or whatever, that's it, isn't it?
And they can really elevate a sandwich or a salad or whatever if you have kind of interesting pickles to go with it. So we try and change the menu weekly, which is where we can kind of do, because we have a tiny menu, and you can kind of introduce interesting pickles. Yeah. Or interesting.
And it's all about what's good at the moment and capturing what's good at the moment. So something like, we're in a kind of an awkward few months now, because it's the end of winter and the start of spring, and it's sort of like a dead month in terms of produce. But like, it's great because we have pickles that we made at the end of the summer and through winter that we have to use now, that we can still, and then when the spring comes along, we'll be capturing what's good then and pickling them. And then, I mean, at the end of the summer is the best time for pickling because there's so much stuff.
I used to work with my wife, and that was the first question we always got asked. I found it boring, but you're a couple, you work together.
But it's
a little bit more interesting than Jenny and I, because you have to make sort of big decisions about buying a food truck, you know, menu, all those sort of things, you know, so you're constantly making decisions.
Yeah, and you kind of have to learn, especially if you're a couple, that you're lovers and business partners, you have to learn how to kind of leave the business bit at the door and kind of keep the relationships side of it open as well. So we've kind of, I think we work well together because then, we get over rows quickly, so we can kind of move on.
I think there's also sometimes though, there's problems because you tend to put off having a business meeting just because you don't want to bring it home or bring it into, you know, there's an awkward sort of thing there.
Did you draw the lines well?
No.
Okay.
So but in fairness to Jenny, Jenny was brilliant because, you know, that happens every year. Most couples have the odd row.
Yeah.
And then we would have to go on air.
Yeah.
You know, so that was...
You're like the couple in Father's Head.
Yeah.
It's good to have
not
role.
Not quite like that, but... Yeah.
It's good to stick to, like, what you're good at as well. Like, I'm more the, as James said, the sort of mad scientist. I like being sort of messy and mad in the kitchen and coming up with my, you know, various things. And then James is more organised and business-like. Yeah. And I'm not at all, you know, so like
he's amazing with food and so creative, but rubbish at social media. So I'm always like we're always trying to teach each other different ways of doing things.
So that's your strength.
Yeah.
You couldn't pickle to save your life, but ask him to do an Instagram reel and eat your rap.
He can do all the pickling stuff. It's just, I guess he just prefers me to do everything like that.
You kind of settle into your roles, I think. Yeah. And you kind of just, as you said, you do what you're good at and the other person does what they're good at.
So Currabinny is in Cork.
That's where William's
from.
Real
Currabinny, the place. Yeah, I grew up there. Yeah,
yeah. So and I, for some reason, I thought that you lived down there, but you don't.
No, but the plan is to move down. Aha. So we, during another thing that happened during the pandemic, we spent a lot of time down in Cork, in Currabinny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was growing up, I always wanted to live in Manhattan or London because I watched Sex and the City or something like that. I wanted the big, fast-paced life. But kind of from meeting William and spending a lot of time down the country, I'm happiest when I'm down the country. I kind of, you know, I want vegetable patch and a few chickens.
I bet you everyone down the country is like, they won't last the winter.
No, but I think the true test is to go and live somewhere to try. Which we have done, because I have friends who've moved to London or whatever, and they haven't spent a chunk of time there, so they kind of realise, actually, I don't want to live here, or I don't want to live down the country. So we spent a good few months down there, and I think we're ready to make that next step. And also the price of houses and stuff, like, we want a garden. You really couldn't get that in Dublin unless you're quite wealthy.
Exactly.
So we want to build.
Is that definite and imminent?
It is. We're actually starting a TV show. We're starting to film a TV show of us basically leaving the city and moving down the country. So it will kind of it will record all the process of how you get a mortgage, how you meet the bank person, how you look for land. And
is Dermot Bannon involved?
I want Dermot Bannon to be involved. So hello,
if he's
Dermot.
Listening, yeah. We'll probably end up at the buying a plot of land and end up living in the caravan itself.
Yeah, which could be nice.
He's in with us on Fridays.
Will you put in a good word
for us? So that'd be the thing.
Yeah.
So you're going to build.
That's the plan,
That's exciting, isn't
it? Yeah, really exciting. And we're
kind of eco and, you know, solar panels and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I was watching his latest installment. No, the one before. It was latest. Anyway, they went to a place in Connemara. You have to watch it. Mm. And I don't usually get, you know, envious of other people's houses, but this was on the seafront. It was built into the side of a hill, and it was just, everything about it was just perfect.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, you know.
I'm ready for the country life. Yeah. I really am.
We probably won't be able to afford to move to Currabinny, though, because it's like that. It's by the sea and there's a forest there and it's very idyllic. So I think price of land there would
James
be.
James is finding this out for the first time.
I want the sea. I want my sea swims every day. No, do you know what? When we first started wanting to move down the country, we had a list of must-haves. We wanted the sea view. We wanted the half an acre, blah, blah. But actually having gone down and seen different parts of Cork, like, there's loads of beautiful places down there.
It's a big
there.
County. There's a lot of sea.
Yeah, exactly.
You're never too far.
What did you eat this week? The podcast?
Yes.
You started off with your parents, did you?
I did. They did the first episode. Yeah. And they were a brilliant first episode because there's lots of funny arguments they had on the episode. Of my dad was like, "Oh, I'd give you a roast chicken now, 9 out of 10." And my mom was like, "Why did I fall down 1 point?" So
I like as well that very interesting the three of you all remember things completely different from your childhood,
That's life, isn't it?
Yeah. But I love doing the podcast because even if you interview someone who's not really into food, or they say they're not into food, you end up talking about stuff they hate or stuff they it must be cooked this way. So everyone has very particular ways about food. And, you know, if you're talking to someone about a dish they love, they end up saying, "Oh, I had that on a holiday," and they talk about the holiday. So it's a fun podcast to do because food conversations can go anywhere, do you know? I mean, I was talking to Joanne McNally on it, and you might think of food when you think her, but she talked about wine and crisps with passion for 40 minutes. Right, so, right, there, you know, yeah, there's yeah, the, everyone yeah, has yeah, a little yeah. thing about what
and
they like.
And it's universal. We all have to eat. We yeah. all have to eat. So, Currabinny, the food truck, is available down there. Say where it is again.
Collins Barracks, Wednesday to Sunday. So come in tomorrow.
Okay. and there's a documentary coming to a screen near you, probably involving Dermot Bannon and a house and all that sort
Fingers
of thing.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Great to see you. Great
thanks
to see you, William.
To see you.
James, thanks for coming in. That's it from us. Cormac is on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. Oh, wait now, hold on. Stop. We'll try that one again. Here we go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.